The hatch at the end opened onto a domed chamber about 100 feet across, by far the largest open volume we had yet seen. I knew it had to be the forward-bearing chamber. This was confirmed by the fact that it had a navel in its floor, perhaps 20 feet across, and everything that we could see on the other side of it was rotating. We had reached the forward end of the core. Surrounding, but invisible to us, was the immense bearing that connected the spinning orb stack to the non-spinning complex of icosahedron and tendons that guarded it. It was a mess. Half a dozen tendon shafts were plumbed into this thing via huge portals shot into its domed ceiling. Fra Jed and I had just emerged from one of them. The adjacent one was the focus of a huge amount of activity and attention. It looked like one of those pits in great cities where stocks are traded. This, of course, was the tendon that led to the World Burner Complex, or what was left of it now that the Veilers had got to it. People were flying into or issuing from it at a rate of about 2 per second. It was like watching the entrance of a hornet's nest in high summer. Most of those going into it were carrying weapons or tools. Some of those coming out were injured. The ingoing and outgoing streams collided in the bearing chamber, and others tried to sort things out, to tell people where to go, what to do, without much result that I could discern, save that they ended up arguing with each other. I was just as happy I couldn't understand what they were saying. The chaos made it almost too easy for me and Fra Jed to move around without attracting notice. In fact, my only problem was distinguishing the Thousander from other men in firefighting gear. But after a brief moment of anxiety when I feared I'd lost him, I spied a likely-looking firefighter gazing in my direction and pointing toward what I had begun to think of as the floor of the chamber, the flat surface with the big hole in the middle of it. The hole was getting smaller. As Jules had explained, wherever the Dab and Ernud's architects had needed to forge a connection between major parts of the core, they had used a ball valve, which was just a sphere with a fat hole drilled through the middle, held captive in a spherical cavity, bridging the two spaces in question. The sphere couldn't go anywhere, but it was free to rotate. Depending on how the hole in its middle was aligned, it could allow free passage or form an impregnable barrier. Such a valve was set into the floor of this chamber. It was so huge that at first I hadn't seen it for what it was. But now that it had gone into motion, its nature and its function were perfectly obvious. It moved ponderously, but by the time Fra Jed managed to draw my attention to it, the thing was already about half-closed, like an eyeball slowly drifting into sleep. Fra Jed planted his feet against a soldier's backside and shoved off, driving the soldier toward the ceiling and him down toward the ball valve. I was already near a sort of ladder or catwalk, which I pushed off against to propel myself after him. When we got to the ball valve, the aperture had narrowed to perhaps 3 feet at its widest. Plenty of room to squeeze through. But we had used up all our momentum just getting there, and our aim had been miserable. After some feverish banging around, we drifted through the aperture and found ourselves hovering in the bore of the sphere, watching the eye at its other end get smaller. There were no handholds that we could use to move ourselves along. If we didn't reach the other end by the time it closed, we'd be imprisoned until the next time they opened the valve. I was too out of breath to do much anyway. I aimed my fire extinguisher back the way we had come and pulled the trigger. The recoil forced it back against me. I took the force with my arms and felt myself tumbling backwards. But I was moving. I slammed into the socket wall at the end, scrabbled for a handhold on the rim of the hole, and pulled myself through. A second later, Fra Jed squirted through on a snowy plume of fire retardant. I grabbed his ankle, which slowed him down quite a bit. We found ourselves adrift and slowly tumbling at the forward extremity of the 2-mile-long, 100-foot diameter shaft that ran the length of the orb stack. We had made it to the core. And if any of those we had left behind in the bearing chamber had found our behavior suspicious, they had not been adroit enough to follow us through the ball valve. Smaller hatches, airlocks made for one person at a time, were planted around it so that people could pass between core and bearing chamber even when the ball valve was closed. I kept a nervous eye on those, half expecting a space cop to fly out and accost us, but then reasoned that it simply wasn't going to happen. Jules' words of a few minutes ago came back to me. What the Veilers had done, what we had done, had been the worst military embarrassment these people had suffered in 1,000 years. The bomb was still on fire, the disaster only getting started. The Veilers might still be alive and fighting, so they weren't going to make a big deal about a couple of firefighters acting weird.